Now, after a break of about 2 months, I'm very pleased to see the return of Dan Atfield from Affinity Wheels. I thought I'd upset you. I've seen you for so long.
Not much chance of that, Scott.
How are you keeping, anyway?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty
Hang on,
good.
We've got to get you closer. I know what's happened. That mic's turned round. That's it. We've got to have it facing that way.
Is that better?
That's a lot better. Now we can hear you. Yeah, there we go. Now, since the start of the year, of course, we've been looking at all kinds of aspects of wheel making, more than I could have imagined actually existed. Powers of attorney, estate planning, trusts, the list goes on. But I think that to try and put some of this into context, you're going to be giving us a few practical examples that you've encountered yourself. So before we do that, I think we just have to remind everyone that in a program like this, we can but scratch the surface. So my advice to you, as always, is that if you have any individual concerns, just pick up the phone, call the guys at Affinity, who will be delighted to give you a free consultation in your own home. You can't ask better than that, where you will be able to talk through your particular circumstances and sort out something tailor-made to your specific requirements. The number that you need is 01245 85 00. That's 01245 85 00. Anyway, what are you going to be telling us about first then, Dan? You've got a whole pile of stuff here.
Well, I think after sort of boring listeners for the last 6 months or so...
I'm sure you haven't bored anyone.
Well, we've talked about a lot of technical aspects of what we do. So I thought it might be nice for a change to talk about some real life situations
right.
that we've come across over the years that may, I guess, add another dimension to the things that we've talked about. And people may listen to these stories. They may be aware of some of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it may touch a nerve and prompt people to take some positive action, shall
yes.
we say. We compiled this document called Matters of Life and Death
right.
some years ago. And it's a compilation of tragic tales, we call it, which is, as I say, these real life stories that have happened, and so I'd just like to pick out two or
right.
three of these to see whether they have any interest to the listeners, really.
Right, go for it. What are you starting with first?
Well, I'm going to start with one that listeners may be aware of, because this is a local Brentwood based incident.
Uh huh.
Something like around 10 years ago,
right?
Where a client came to me because she was extremely distraught. Her daughter, her only child, at the age of 21, had been murdered. So not many murders in Brentwood, Scott.
No.
And this 21-year-old had a 10-month-old child, which, of course, was my client's only grandchild.
Mm.
And the murderer was discovered to be the father of that child.
Hmm.
So
charming.
This 21-year-old has obviously formed a relationship, had a child together with this guy. He murdered her. He was subsequently caught, of course, and quite rightly punished by being sent to prison, accompanied by his father, who has made some attempts to help him to cover up the crime. So now, of course, we have a 10-month-old child, a boy, who's left without his own parents. And the law, of course, in the absence of a clearly drafted will appointing guardians, and she didn't have a will, the law basically says that child goes into foster care, and that's exactly what happened.
Mm.
The mother of the murdered lady... then began a rather traumatic battle to get custody of that child. And it took her a considerable amount of time, in the order of 2 years. It cost her dearly. Her legal costs were in the order of £20,000. It cost her more than that overall, Scott, because her husband... basically asked for a divorce because this lady was so focused on getting that child that he couldn't basically live under the same roof. So it cost her her marriage. When the husband left, he asked for his half of the house, so they had to sell
yes.
the property. And the battle was further complicated by the fact that there was somebody else fighting for custody. And that was the mother of the murderer, who, and this is largely a matter of opinion as to whether you share this view or not, but in her eyes, of course, Scott, she'd done nothing wrong. Some might argue that she'd conceived the man that had murdered this young lady and married the man that helped to cover up the murder. But, you know, the law has to take its course.
Yeah, sure.
And it has to consider all the options for that child. And there was kind of a happy ending insofar as after the two-year battle, the mother of the murdered child, that's my client, she won temporary custody of the child. And she, to this day, 10 years later, continues to bring up that child as if he is her own. And I think that's quite a happy ending to that story, insofar as she is obviously the best person to bring up that child in the absence of the child's mother and father, because of that strong bond that that
she must have limited funds since she's lost so much.
Yeah, but some people don't see that as that important in when a relationship of this is at stake.
So how could that have been avoided?
Very simply, I mean, who would have been able to tell a 21-year-old that she needs to make a will naming a guardian to take care of the child should she lose her life? At 21, we're all immortal, aren't we?
I guess the lesson there is that the minute that you have children or any dependents, then you've really got to you've got to think about what happens to them, because you know there's the under the bus theory. It could happen.
We always pick that one, don't we? We certainly don't say if I'm murdered.
More likely to be run over by a bus.
Yeah, it's important.
Well, in theory,
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I mean. When people say to me, and it's one of the most common reasons for younger people not to make a will, is that they will say very often, I don't have anything to leave. And of course, my response to that is that you have the most precious thing in the world to leave, and that is a child or indeed children. And most people wouldn't pick foster care for their children.
No, they would not.
They would sooner people in the family or close friends. The moral of that story is, had she made a will, then guardianship would have been a formality. It still needs rubber stamping, if you like, by the children's court, but very much a formality.
And it was saved a lot of heartache and a lot of money. And you have another one you want to pick out now?
Yeah, if you want me to move on to another one.
Yes, why not?
This is, this is one of my own clients, and this is about a situation that occurred back in 1980, so a good few years ago.
Right.
And this is about a lady that I went to see whose husband, in his working life, had been a scaffolder. And when I went to see this lady, she was her husband's main carer, and she'd had a pretty rough time of it in her life because many, many years before, her husband, whilst at work one day, in the days before health and safety was quite so stringent as it is today, he was working on the second floor of a building on the scaffolding, and he lost his balance trying to manoeuvre a large pole, and he fell to the pavement. And he wasn't killed. He got very serious head injury, which mentally incapacitated him to the extent that he was not able to talk. And I met this guy, and it was a very peculiar meeting because I was sitting at his dining room table chatting to his wife, my client, and he kind of walked up and stood in front of me and stared, and it was like the lights were on but nobody was at home. Yet he could still go to the newspaper shop and buy a newspaper. He could still make himself a sandwich, but he couldn't speak, and he never worked again after that incident. Now she had two young children at the time. She had no choice but to take over as the breadwinner. She did three part-time jobs, including one which was caring for an elderly chap. And she was advised to go to court to sue his employer for compensation.
Which I'd have thought that they would have paid up automatically, but clearly not.
Well, automatically, you would assume...
Because it's some sort of insurance, surely.
These things take time, don't they, Scott? Mm. And, in fact, it did take her 2 years to fight that battle. They eventually paid out the princely sum of £62,000, which seems to me not very much.
Wouldn't go very far, even 10 years ago. 1980, you say?
It's a lot of years ago.
Yeah, 35 years. Yeah.
But nonetheless, not much for a working man's life.
No, quite.
And
how old was he at the time?
He was, let me think now, he was about 45 at the time.
Right.
So a lot of working years left in him.
Yeah.
Like you have.
oh, you smooth talker.
So the court process kicked off, and as these things do, they take time. It took 2 years to fight the case. When she left court after being awarded the $62,000, she kind of said to the solicitor, "I can now move on with my life."
Mm.
And the solicitor said, "It's not quite that simple."
Because?
The award was, of course, for her husband. And what that meant was she couldn't access that award. It had to go into something called the Public Trust Fund, which is a large, something like £3 billion fund managed by fund managers on behalf of the Court of Protection. And then she had to go back to court, a different court this time, to apply for what we call power of attorney. But in that situation, it would have been receivership or a court-appointed deputyship.
Uh-huh.
And she was awarded the power to access that money, but only jointly with a solicitor. And what that meant was that if she wanted to buy him a winter coat or a new pair of shoes, she had to go basically cap in hand to get somebody else's signature to withdraw those funds.
Did she have to pay for that each time she saw the solicitor as well?
She doesn't pay, but there are costs taken from that trust.
That's what I meant. It's coming from the fund.
Yes, they do. Yeah, but it's invested, so in real terms, that fund didn't really go down in value by the time I met her because it was invested.
Uh-huh.
But of course, she couldn't. They refused her permission to move house because he was a co-owner of the property.
Mm.
She would like to have moved. And of course, what made life very interesting was that I was called to see her because she'd received a very unexpected telephone call shortly before from a solicitor who basically rang her and said, introduced herself basically and said, "Are you sitting down?" And you remember I said earlier she was a carer for an elderly gentleman. Well, he left her a sum of money, and it was six figures. It was a good chunk of money, which of course she'd never had before.
Right.
And I was there to advise her that, you know, on what to do with her will and how to deal with her estate. Because if she had allowed her estate to go to her husband and she died before her husband, her estate would have disappeared into that
public pot.
Trust fund, into that pot. And that could have been a tough battle then, of course, for her children. So we used a form of will with a trust arrangement to make sure that her children's interests were protected should she predecease him.
Right.
So that lady's had a pretty rough time of it, and all because the husband didn't have in place at the time that he fell from the scaffold a power of attorney.
Right.
It was an unexpected event. You know, I sat with somebody the other day who's in her mid-80s and sharp as a pin.
Yeah.
And for her nephew to tell me that she's not going to lose her capacity anytime soon. How short-sighted is that?
Well, it could happen at any moment.
Precisely.
Yeah, yeah.
Precisely. It's the unexpected things that catch us out.
Now, powers of attorney, of course, we've discussed it before, and I know we're going to be coming back to that in a month or so because of the new regulations which the government are bringing in, yeah?
Yeah, and they're running a campaign at the moment, of right. course, the government, called Choice Not Chance,
right.
and they are under duress from our profession, the legal profession. They're running this campaign to encourage everybody to have powers of attorney in place and not leave it to chance that the unexpected should take your capacity away and leave your family battling through the courts.
Okay. Well, look, let's take a pause there. When we come back, what will be your next case that you'll
I'm going to tell you an interesting story about one of my clients whose father died, and the will was contested.
You were going to give us another story. We're taking a look. Well, they're not stories. They're real-life issues that have come up on some of the items that we've been talking about since the beginning of the year. And this one is about...
Well, this is a very short story about a client that we were asked to go and see who was pretty much on his deathbed, suffering with cancer, heavily dosed up with morphine at the time. You'd have thought it was a very straightforward will to construct. He had basically a reasonable size estate, 1.3 million. Less at the time, the inheritance tax on that figure would have left something like about £910,000, which he'd willed 50% to his son and 50% to his stepdaughter. So that's £455,000 each. Mm. However, his son wasn't happy with that.
And he wanted more than
450. He felt he was worth more than 50%, and so he decided to bring a claim and contest the will on the basis that he should get more than 50%. And at the time he went through the contesting process, he claimed various sort of different grounds, including lack of capacity, lack of knowledge and approval. He even said at one point that the stepdaughter was colluding with Affinity, and his grounds for assuming that was that she lived in Ilford and we were in Brentwood, which means that they were both in Essex.
Hmm.
I mean, whether Ilford is still in Essex is a debatable point, but anyway...
Well, I classify it as Essex, but...
He brought the claim, and she defended it. Obviously, her cost to defend the claim was in the order of £110,000. His costs, we estimate, because they would have been more, because he brought the case, we estimate his costs would have been about 130. So total costs for that case about 240,000. His action failed. He lost. He was ordered to pay not only his own costs but hers as well. So from the original 455,000 that he was due to receive, had he just
accepted it. Let that be a lesson to you,
right? It took £240,000 chunk, which was basically, you know, more than half of what he was about to receive. So, you know,
what's the point?
Cracker situation. I mean, what's the point? Well, contesting of wills is on the increase. It's very, very important to, in view of this, to have a will drafted professionally, take the right advice. The use of trusts, of course, can help to prevent or sort of minimise the risk of successful claims. So I just thought I'd include that little story, really, on the basis that could he have done any differently? Yeah, probably could have sort of tied some of his estate up in trust and minimised that risk. But
who? The guy that died?
The guy before he died.
That's right. Okay, yeah. Not
oh,
the,
of course.
Not
I meant before he died. Yeah.
No, I meant not the chap that was taking the court. The case.
No.
So, but what about, it seems very unfair that the other person actually had to go and defend it, but she obviously had to, otherwise she'd have lost without...
Well, obviously she
might have lost some, you know,
yeah, exactly.
A lot of money.
But, you know, if the will writer or the solicitor who prepared the will has done their job effectively enough. Nowadays, I would expect anybody who's thinking of contesting a will to go and take advice on what their chances of success are, and perhaps go down the route of mediation, because the legal profession now will be telling people. I mean, this was quite some years ago, maybe about 6 years ago, and I think nowadays that the solicitors will be, or counsel will be, giving you straight talking about what your chances are of success. You've got to take a very balanced view. I mean, I know of somebody who was told that if they contested and lost, they'd lose their house. The such would be the cost. They decided not to pursue it because the risk to reward was, you know, not balanced. And so not many people, I think, would gamble their house on the success.
Not a terribly good idea.
No, not when the judgment is being made by essentially one person, judge listens to the evidence. So that's just a quick one, just to let people know that they should take the right advice. And the last one is a precursor, really, Scott, to what we're going to be talking about next time. This is about a chap, again, another one of my clients. He originally came from Cyprus. He was a Greek Cypriot. When I say was, he's still alive as far as I'm aware. And he and his wife's dream, lifelong dream, after working all their lives in this country, was to move back to Cyprus and to see out their days in their original homeland. In early 2008, this happened. At the time, the gentleman, who was 78, decided that it was now time to go back. His wife, who was 74, had been suffering from Alzheimer's, which was progressively worsening, and so he felt there was no time to lose. However, what happened was that they put the house on the market, and it was, of course, 2008. It was a tough time for the housing market, you recall. And he basically... a nightmare scenario evolved. His wife's dementia became worse and worse and worse. She was eventually diagnosed as being beyond the capacity to sign the contract for sale. The property had gone down in value by some £50,000.
A lot of money.
Because he needed her signature or the authority to act on her behalf, he had no option because they didn't have powers of attorney to go to court and apply for a court order. Now, he applied to the court for the right to make decisions on her behalf, and part of that process is that they have to seek permission, essentially, from his children, of which he has four grown-up children. And two of the children wrote back and said, "We have absolutely no objection whatsoever to Dad making Mum's decisions." And the other two wrote back and said, "Well, we have no objection, but." And as soon as the Court of Protection see the word "but," alarm bells ring. They want to go into far more detail. And the upshot was that they weren't prepared to give him the authority to make her decisions unless one of the children that had used that "but" word was jointly making those decisions with him. And so they made a joint appointment. And that particular child doubted his own father would spend that money on his mother. He thought he would go back to Cyprus and live a frivolous lifestyle, fritter the money away, and could basically see his inheritance disappearing with it. And so he wouldn't let them sell the property. And that gentleman is still, to this day, stuck in that property because his son won't sign the paperwork to sell it.
Well, as it happens, he's probably fortunate because of what happened with Cyprus, but...
Well, I'm not sure that would have bothered him too much, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I mean, look, you know, in every adversity. But the moral of the story there is, had he had a power of attorney, he wouldn't have had to make the court application. That cost him about £2,500, that court application, power of attorney would have been just a few hundred pounds. So, you know, it's a lot cheaper to have the paperwork in place.
Yep.
Notwithstanding, of course, as we've acknowledged in earlier programmes, it's a document that you may never need to call upon.
Well, that's the case of so many of them, but you have to take the insurance to some degree.
You do.
You can't take. You can't cover every eventuality, but you've got to cover as many as you can.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, look, thanks again for all that. As we said at the outset, there are a heck of a lot of variables available. And in a programme like this, we can scratch the surface. So my advice to you is always pick up that phone, call the guys at Affinity. They'll be delighted to give you a free consultation in your own home where you'll be able to talk through your particular circumstances and sort something out that's tailor-made to your requirements. That number again is 01245 850000, 850000, Chelmsford number. Now you're going to be coming back to us on the 10th of August, and you are indeed going to be looking very closely at this question of powers of attorney again.
Very emotive topic, very important, and the government have made the point well recently that everybody over the age of 18 should have one in place, just in case.
Right, good point. Good point to leave it there. Thanks very much indeed for coming in yet again.